All right, quieting down now. Live from the Brit and Yankee Pub Studios, it's those two fat guys, Phil and Mark, with another Brit and Yankee craft beer pubcast. I can hear the pints being pulled right now.
Not a while, dude. Bring the drums in. Let's have a party. Pump up the bitter. Shh, test it. Pump up the bitter. Pump up the bitter. Pump up the bitter.
Take it away, lads. Pump up the bitter. You are paying for that beer, aren't you?
Hello, this is Phil Clark, landlord of the Brit and Yankee Pub and host of the Brit and Yankee Craft Beer Podcast, and welcome to Pubcast number 203. This week, we're on one of our outside broadcasts, heading down to a local brewery, and I'm flying solo this week as my co-host Mark Naske is off on a trip to the Cowboy States collecting beers, and then he'll be at GABF, where he will be at the Church Street Brewing booth. So if you're going, stop by, say hi, and chat beer with him. As you know, we focus on suburban Chicago breweries, and on this week's episode, I'm on my way to Forest Park, a suburb that's as close to Chicago city limits as we've been in a while. I'm meeting with the owner brewer of Exit Strategy Brewing Company, Chris Vallow, and we're going to sit down and chat about his enterprise, hopefully over one of his award-winning brews. Next week, we'll be welcoming Illinois beer historian John Bitterman back to the show, and we'll be celebrating the 2016 GABF show with some Colorado brews that I've had in my fridge for a while, and it's time to pull them out and taste them. If you want to get hold of us, check out our Facebook page, our website, or send us an email to pints@thebritandyankee.com. But for now, let's head over to Forest Park and a noisy night at Exit Strategy Brewing, where I sat down with Chris and began our conversation by murdering the pronunciation of his name. We're at Exit Strategy Brewing Company. I'm sitting down here with Chris Vallow. I knew I would get that wrong.
But see, the problem is, like, my family doesn't even agree on how it's pronounced. Like, I remember my dad and I always said Vallow, and my brother, I think, always says Vallow. But as long as you get the E-A-U into the O, I think you're going to pass.
Yeah, I've got the low bit okay, yeah. But the Vallow. So like in Valley.
I used to have a diatribe. I could literally go, like, the Packers don't play at Lambeau Field. It's not the Federal Bureau of Investigation. You don't stay at a French chateau.
We haven't had that discussion with you about your name, because I know we had that discussion when we first met at, I think it was down in Yorkville,
yeah.
Where they were having a test craft beer tasting, and it was Catamon and Exit Strategy. I was pouring for Adam, and of course you were there.
I was.
Pouring for Exit Strategy.
Although we ended up pouring for each other most of the
day. We had a good time.
Yeah, it was good. That was a lot of fun.
So here at Exit Strategy, it's a great environment. Actually, we were just brought our beers by Les, who is the assistant brewer. Hello, Les.
Hello.
Hello, and I understand you're a Liverpool supporter,
yes,
aren't you? Which is okay, because, you know, as long as you're not Arsenal, because
no.
I'm a Spurs supporter, so that's all right. You know, we'll be all right on that one.
Les is currently gritting his teeth and trying not to say anything.
And of course, we're second in the league right now. Where's Liverpool? I can't remember. Oh, is it
fourth?
Fourth. Okay, down a little bit then.
It's in England.
It's in England. There you go.
Liverpool's in England.
All right. So you brought us our samples, and we'll get to those in just a second. Well, we may as well get to beer number one, actually, that we're sampling here.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay. And what we've got going on here in our glasses is your Duchess, which is a maple brown.
It's a codenamed Duchess, and it's
codenamed.
We've lately been obsessed with Archer in my household, so we've got like the last. We did a one-off APA for the microbrew review, and it ended up being called "You're Not My Supervisor" because we had to come up with a name on the fly.
Yeah.
And then this one's just another Archer reference. So this one is actually like a smoked maple brown ale. So it's got the malts involved are smoked cherry wood. Maple syrup in the boil, and then we also just basically like two rows, some different caramel chocolate. It's a pretty simple grain bill, but it's just got a kind of nice smoky presence without it being too overpowering. And then the maple syrup kind of gives it a little bit of a, like, hidden sweetness to it, and like you get a little bit more of it than nose, I think, in the flavor. I mean, it's kind of hard to get that to translate flavor wise because almost that sugar is gonna ferment out, and then you've got a little bit of, you know, it kind of thins the beer out a little bit too. So it's actually pretty drinkable
But it's very drinkable. I was wondering if I was going to like it or not because you have the word maple in it. So I knew it was going to have some sort of maple syrup. But you're definitely right. That's in the background.
Yeah.
Very nice dry finish to it. It's almost oaky.
Yeah.
And that's probably the smoke.
That's
right?
The smoke. Yeah. Because it's like, I think when I first tried it, when it came out of after we got it carved up, it was kind of like, oh, that. Like that smoke flavor kind of lingers in your mouth, but it's not like in an offensive way. It's not like overpowering. It's not like drying. It's just kind of just there.
Just kind of there.
And it's what, 5.6, I think?
Yeah, probably like 5.3, I think.
5.3, okay.
Yeah.
So, which is actually a theme on a lot of your beers. You have a quite a wide range, and I'd say you've probably got at least 10 of them that are in the less than 6% area. So very, very pintable.
And that's by design. Like, I think, well, one, it's more accurate to style to be brewing beers that are in that range. I think I've just never been a big fan of, like, clobbering people with the amount of alcohol in beer. I mean, I always, like, go to, like, well, what do I want? Like, well, when I want to go out, I want to be able to have more than two beers or one beer, depending on if.
Right.
A lot of times, you're really making these calls on beer menus, where it's like, I drink that, but it's, like, 8%, so I can't do that. Like, we only have one regular beer that's 8% or above, and that's our double IPA, and then the other ones are either, you know, between 5 and 6. We have a couple that are between like 6 and 7, like our IPA is up there, but it's an IPA, so it should be a little bit higher.
Right.
But yeah, that's kind of a philosophically how we approach it. So.
And you actually came into Exit Brewing in a way that I think a lot of people dream of doing, but just don't have the balls to do it. And that's where you basically gave up your job and said, I'm going to do a brewery. Tell us the story.
So I was at a point in about 2012 where I wasn't really enchanted with being an attorney at that anymore. So
you're an attorney.
I am.
High-powered attorney.
Yeah, no, not so much high power. Just, you know, relatively confident. But
there you go.
So, you know, I'd been practicing for about 5 years at that point. I was kind of getting a little tired of it. Wife Catherine encouraged me to get a, you know, homebrew kit and start making beer and see, give me a hobby. Something I might enjoy.
Yeah,
so
right.
The first beer we ever made was like one of those Brewer's Best, you know, dump and boil kits. And like I think it was actually like an Australian IPA. So we jokingly called the beer Exit Strategy. And it was just, I mean, it was just one of those things. Like we didn't think about it for a year. So, we did two kit beers, extract, two all grain kits, and then the fifth batch of beer I ever made in my life was the first batch of our pomegranate wheat Persephone, and that was Catherine's idea in terms of like, what do you want me to make? Just pomegranate wheat.
And Catherine is your wife, right?
Yeah.
And she also was she was a part-time teacher, right?
She was full-time.
Oh, she was full-time.
Yeah,
okay.
She taught for about 12 years, and she did everything from like 4th, 5th, and 6th grade general ed classroom to differentiation coaching. She taught Latin at one point, gifted programs. I mean, she was all over the place. She was in charge of their her district's union. She actually taught in Forest Park where we're at for about 10 years. So she's an incredible teacher, so she's very good at it.
But, and she gave up her job to be the manager, right?
Yeah, she runs the front of the house and a lot of that type of, you know, everything that kind of goes with that. And then they keep me locked up in the back, which is where I belong anyway, so...
Good man.
Yeah, I know my place.
Yeah.
So it seems that you had actually, you know, you said your first beer was Exit Strategy. So you've basically written your exit strategy for getting the hell out of the rat race.
Yeah, I mean, I think that first batch of Persephone we sent off to I think it was the Brewers of South Suburbia homebrew competition because I figured whatever. I thought it turned out pretty cool. It actually won the fruit beer category. I'm like, oh, well, maybe I don't totally suck at this. So then we just kind of started making more and more beer and just designing more and more recipes, like tweaking things. Eventually sent it out. I sent it out to homebrew competitions all over the place just to get kind of that unbiased, not your friend saying, oh, it's good feedback.
And you have won quite a few awards, I
understand. Yeah, when I was doing homebrew, I think I had like 45 ribbons or medals or whatnot. Yeah. One best in show, one close to best in show. But it was, I mean, so we did well, and I think that was kind of one of the things that sparked me to think, well, we think maybe we can actually do this. So really about maybe 5 months after I started brewing, we started writing a business plan. And then when it came time to pick an actual name for the company, we kicked around a couple of things, and then we got back to, I mean, it's right there. Let's just call it Exit Yep. Strategy. I mean, it makes sense. So that's what we did. And so that was really the beginning of it.
And being a lawyer, writing your business plan, I bet you had the big long words in it.
No, we don't use big long words. There's actually a really good book written by one of the founders from Elysian. I always say Elysian. I don't know if it's Elysian or Elysian. Out of Seattle, it's literally called How to Start a Brewery, and at the back of it contained their original business plan. So it's pretty nice little model to base it off of. To give you what should go in and what's your scope. I mean, it was very helpful, but it took like a year and a half to write the damn thing. So, but we weren't in that big of a rush,
right? And now that you've opened up, I think you've been open for what, just over a year?
About a year and a half now.
Year and a half, okay. Mm-hmm. Any awards for the official brews?
No, we haven't really sent anything out for anything at this point. I mean, we've been so busy just trying to keep up and to get things going here. It's hard to. I barely remember what day it is most days of the week.
Well, we'll give you the Brit and Yankee Award because the first beer that I came to have of yours was on tap at my local tavern, John's Tavern in Winfield, and he had Judgmental Dick on your double IPA, and it went down very well. And luckily you were serving that at Yorkville, so we were able to participate a little more of that. That is a very nicely balanced and well-rounded, not too much in your face, double IPA.
Well, and that's, I think with all of our beers, my main, main staple of what it should be is balance. And balance, I think, is something that is maybe not paid as close attention as it should be in brewing. I mean, I think when you have, if you're making a balanced beer, it's, you know, it may not be 100% of what you want it to be, but it's going to be drinkable and it's going to be a quality beer. Some stuff that's just so out of balance is it's just, that's when you have just unpalatable things.
It gets crazy.
Yeah. And so I think we've tried to keep our IPAs properly hopped, but not ridiculously overloaded with stuff. And that's what, I think we hit the mark most of the time. I don't think we've really had anything. It was ugh. But it happens. But that's kind of one of the central tenets of, I've always had with brewing is make it a balanced beer. So that's the approach we've always tried to take with it. Holding on to me. Kiss the years that are the dying. Kiss the face that makes you stay. They are in your rhythms walking. They are showing you the way. Breath and breath above the sickness. Shouting threats upon your life. Then we are like lights. We're fool enough to fight. It will chink you in the balance. Taking more than left to live. We are like lights, we're strong enough to give. So one of the cool things about our kind of our story is when we, it was kind of like the number of people that have been involved in getting us to where we're at. And so when we first found this building, we were starting to work with an architect friend who we met through homebrewing at some like local competition or whatnot. And he was an architect, and so he started doing the layout for us, and then he actually put us in touch with friends of his at a branding agency in the city called Laughlin Constable, and they're just the most awesome people in the world. Like they met us, they came out here when this place was in the middle of July when it was un-air conditioned. It was still the old building before it is now, and they just got to know our story, drank a bunch of our home brews, and they came up with our icon. Cool.
The icon just so that listeners can tell us, it's a garbage can, but what's in it?
It's a briefcase. So
nice.
And they presented it to us as like, this is your moment. You know, you're making the call to do this. It took Catherine and I like a good 2 or 3 days to digest. I'm like, well, I mean, we're serving food and beer, like it's the trash can, and like I can't think of anything better to represent like the idea.
Yeah,
right. I mean, it was when we tried to come up with things on our own, it was almost like always too literal. Like we always have like an arrow pointing somewhere or like a right. You know, something like that. But then, I mean, they even took it a step further though. And then for all of our individual beers, they knew the backstories of them. They knew where the names came from, and they did all the artwork for us.
So I was going to say, who did the artwork for it?
Because
it's really
designers.
Good. I'm looking up your poster for your Scott Squash. Is that how you pronounce it? Scott Squash, right?
Scott Squash.
Scott Squash.
Like a Sasquatch, but
it's kind of interesting because it's a silhouette, and the silhouette is of what could be Sasquatch. But in the Victorian high collar.
Oh, it's like a steampunk,
Exactly, yes. And it's kind of cool. I got some good ones here. So,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to say, we'll talk about some of the names and how you came about it later on.
But all right.
What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say that, I mean, all of our beers have, like, there's something behind the name for the most part. That's actually, Sasquatch is actually named after a good friend of mine from undergrad in Ohio who... He's Scottish, and he kind of looks like a Sasquatch. So
okay.
It fits pretty well.
And that
well.
Describes probably about 80% of the brewing community, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm like the...
I probably offended everybody now.
Oh, no. I'm the outcast. I have zero tattoos, zero piercings in my head, and no beard, and I can't grow one, and my hair's short.
You are kind of clean cut there, I must admit.
It's pretty depressing.
Well, let's get undepressed and try another one of your brews, because I know the lovely Les has brought us this good sample. And round there is your blonde ale, which I've forgotten the name of it.
It's called Knob Locked Out. So
not locked out.
Knob Locked Out. So knob, like K-N-O-B, locked, L-O-C-K-E-D,
okay.
Out. And so this one got its name. It's named after a couple of our best friends who used to live about four doors down from us where we live now. And when they first moved in, they had a habit of locking themselves out of their house. Their last name is Knoblock. So.
Oh, okay.
and Mike, the husband of the couple, was a big like Pilsner or Kel fan. He loved that style. And I was like, well, I only do ales, but I guess I could do a blonde. And it seemed like the fitting style of beer to name after them. So.
And that was going to be my question, actually, the difference between a blonde ale and a Pilsner. Obviously, one is an ale and one's a lager. But the blonde ale... to me, I've just tasted this, and it's got a very, almost heads towards, I guess, a Hefeweizen area, kind of a wheaty flavor. Is that how you describe it, the yeast in it?
Yeah, like, that's actually a good pickup, because it does, we do sweet orange peel in the boil, so it's going to get a little bit, unless we're actually, I think we're actually drinking the whip beer. I think that is our whip beer. I think this is the blonde.
We're drinking the wrong one. Now, I have to tell you, Chris, that's not your fault, because I picked it up. Thinking that would be it, not seeing this blonde one. So you do have another one in there.
This is the blonde.
So we'll just double scratch that, and we'll go back and we'll say, okay, now what are we drinking here? The wheat ale?
Okay.
You know what? Actually, that's pretty damn good that I noticed it had a wheaty flavor.
See, there you go. I mean, you
I couldn't tell by the look, but I could tell by the taste.
You got it right there.
So the wheat ale, what's that called?
So that's our whip beer is called Apologize. So it is a it's a traditional Belgian wheat. So Belgian whip beer strain.
Okay.
bitter orange peel, not sweet orange peel.
Okay.
And coriander, and then we add a little bit of ginger to the boil, too, just to kind of give it a little different twist. Super clean.
It is.
Yeah. We're It's one of my favorite beers. It's named after really good friends of ours who now live in Austin, Texas, which, apologize, was a favorite term of theirs, throw one each at one another during disagreements.
Well, having detected the difference between the two, we should obviously slip over to the Knoblocked Out, which it's tough to get my mouth around that one. So as I look at it, yeah, this is much more looking like a Pilsner.
Yeah.
So, but this is an ale.
It is an ale, yeah.
So back to that discussion. So you've used some type of malt and obviously not the same technique to brew it.
Right. So this one is primarily basically just German Pilsen malt. So it's got a nice kind of malt forward flavor to it. We use a little bit of caramel and a little bit of...
Yeah, I'll get that.
Vienna. Yeah, I mean, so it's a little bit... I mean, if you're going to do a malt forward beer, do a malt forward beer. I mean, it's got a little bit of orange in it as well.
Doesn't have a particularly sweet finish.
No, it's like pretty. It's pretty dry. I mean, it's a pretty.
It's a
pretty dry finish, or at least balanced finish anyway. Clean finish.
So, as we talk about this style of beer, do you find that this is a, as we call it, a tranny beer, a transition
a
beer,
a gateway beer?
Yeah, a gateway beer. Yeah. We prefer tranny, but maybe that's not politically correct these days. I don't know. The gateway beer is for the people who, you know, want to try a craft beer and just start off with this, and then they move up to the wheat beer, and then hey, next thing you know, they're onto the Scott Squatch. Man, that's a tough one to say.
Some of our beers are kind of a mouthful to get out. So, but yeah, so this one's it's probably our second or third best seller. We do sell a lot of it, and I think it's probably because it is the easiest. I mean, it's really approachable, kind of the easiest beer we have in that regard.
So, what has been your greatest satisfaction in opening ESBC? And what exactly have you discovered that you didn't know or surprised you about it?
Oh, I mean, how much time we have? That's a 20-hour conversation.
Okay, summary.
So to summarize.
you wordy lawyers, you know. Come on.
I mean, I think for me, the biggest satisfaction is the fact that we started with a concept scratched down on a piece of paper and did the work. Put the time in, like learned the craft, you know, made the hard decisions, made, you know, and actually pulled the trigger and, you know, brought something into existence. And that was hard enough as is. But then it opened, and then you got to run it every day.
So what have you found that you didn't know about, you know, when you opened it?
I mean, there's volumes of that. I mean, you learn something new every day. Like, there's always something that's...
Yeah.
You didn't know, or that you weren't expecting, or didn't turn out the way you would think. I don't think I've ever worked this hard in my life. I mean, so it's definitely challenging.
You're still part-time lawyering.
And I am.
And then you come back here and you brew. How many times a week do you brew?
Depends.
What size brewery you got as well?
So it's a 5-barrel brew house, and then we have 2 5s and 2 10 fermenters, so we can do 30 barrels at a time. So we will brew anywhere from 2 to 3 times a week. This is a really odd week. We brewed Monday, and we won't brew again until next week just because we've got pretty much all our tanks are jammed. We've got we're doing a one-off beer for Nightmare on Chicago Street out in Elgin at the end of October.
Okay.
And that's 20 barrels in and of itself. So that's currently occupying all my fermenters for two of them. They're two of the big guys, and like frankly, we're a little slim on kegs at the moment. So
what was the beer you brewed?
We did an American Amber. Okay. So it's kind of got a nice mixture of a couple different caramel malts and Munich and Turo, and then finish it off with a lot of Crystal, Autumn, and Cascade hops. Just kind of give it a nice citrusy punch at the end. It won't be like super hop forward. It'll almost be like a really malty, caramelly APA more than anything. So, but I think it'll turn out fine. It's like,
okay, so that sounds cool. And out of these two, I definitely like your wheat ale, which I've forgotten the name again.
Apologize.
I apologize for forgetting that. Sorry. Sorry.
I mean, I like the style a lot. And it's that.
Yeah, I think for anybody who's not keen on the Hefeweizens, which really are that clovey, banana-y, yeasty thing coming on there, and I know a lot of people are not keen on it. This is an ideal beer for them.
It's kind of got like that muted profile. Like it's there, but it's not
very
as
good. Yeah,
it's not as like you don't smell it. You're like, oh, that's a bunch of bananas and clove, and which is, I mean, it's definitely there. I mean, it's a similar yeast strain, but it's not as exactly as in your face with that. So.
Your flagship beers, which you really have settled into, what, probably 8 to 10 of them as being standards, they seem to be very drinkable. And I think we covered this a little bit, but that's the philosophy of your brewery, is to make things that are drinkable?
Yeah, I mean, we try to have a core portfolio of 12. I mean, it's hard to keep that number of beers on tap constantly, especially with, only 4 fermentation vessels, and I mean just the turnover. But yeah, I mean the principle has always been kind of make beers that are very approachable, make beers that are drinkable. You could maybe call them almost like boring because they are for the most part strictly to style, which I think is, yeah. I mean, I think that's almost a refreshing thing nowadays, is to have things that are just kind of like solidly within a style, like. There's a really good, I can't really remember the context, but there was a speech by, I think it was one of the guys from the BA a couple of years ago, and it was basically, his point was, that's great that all you guys are out there opening breweries, but, like, try making just a decent brown ale before you do all this crazy stuff, and, like, don't screw up craft by just going so far off the reservation, and that's probably a pretty poor reiteration of what he said, but, I mean, it was kind of the general theme. And that's, you know, how I learned to brew was basically looking at the styles, looking at, like, the guidelines from, like, 2008 at the time, I think. I don't know if the next one was out at that point. And just saying, like, okay, well, if I want to make this style of beer, like, what should I be doing? Like, what's the gravity should be? What should the IBUs be? There's actually, something called the BU to GU ratio that I don't know that I'm, like...
The BU to GU. Okay.
So bitterness unit to gravity unit.
Oh,
and it's,
okay.
And it's a ratio of, you know, if you're making, you know, for, say you're making a Scottish ale, like, well, it should have... You know, this many gravity units compared to this many bitterness units, and it's a comparison of, I mean, so even if like a style, you know, if a style has a gravity range of, you know, 10 points from 1.05 to 1.06, obviously your IBU should shift a little bit to keep it balanced,
right.
And that kind of gives you the measuring stick for like, well, how many, you know, how many hops do I really want to put into this beer, and that's, you know, I think that's... But that's something I probably pay more attention to than anything else, because that keep that in style. I mean, to keep it balanced like that, I think is.
So I think you have succeeded with certainly all the beers I've tasted so far, and
we haven't given you the crappy ones.
Oh right! Oh come on, man! So luckily, I have something in front of me now that is one of the styles I really really enjoy, especially at this time of the year. Although I think it's drinkable any time of year, and that's it. A fine English porter, is it?
It's, I think technically it would be like a robust porter. Because
A robust English porter. Okay.
Sure.
Gotta have English in there somewhere, man.
It's, it is Maris Otter base malt, so it's very English.
All right. But Maris Otter baseball?
No, base malt.
Oh, base malt. I was going to say, we don't play baseball. Come on, guys.
No, you guys have that cricket thing.
I say, that's cricket.
That's cricket. No, so this is a...
What's it called?
It's called Rufus. So this is
Rufus.
Named after our French bulldog, who's... Okay. I mean, so I kind of beefed this up on the IBUs and the, well, not on the IBUs, but the ABV, just because it's, he's kind of a curmudgeon, so it's good to give him a little bit of a...
We'd probably get on if he wasn't French.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So he was. So this one's very, again, I think try and keep them very drinkable, and I think this is a nice combination of... we haven't made this one in a while, so I didn't remember
this one. This one, to me, the first sip I had, I went, whoa, that's a nice rush of roastiness coming in there. And then the more you have of it, it again finishes dryly.
Yeah.
But clean, yeah. Exactly, yeah. And I guess, is that the malt that makes it do that?
Yeah, I think that's probably, I'm trying to think of that one, it's a little bit of roast barley, some different chocolates, the Marisot, or a little bit of caramel, and then there's a couple different German malts we use that are really, really nice.
I'm getting a little of the chocolate and coffee, the mild amounts of it that you should have in a porter. It's not the mouthfeel is not heavy.
Right.
It's not light. To me, it's right where it should be for something like this.
Well, thank you.
To at least know you're having something that's a different type of beer.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I think we've tried to, I think that's one of the things, I think we've succeeded at is getting the right, kind of the right composition of all the beers. And that's...
So, are you ever going to go wacky?
I mean,
everybody at some time seems to come out with something that's a little bit off the hook, okay?
Yeah, and I think we're going to...
Put it in a bottle or something. Oh, we haven't talked about bottles or canning anything like that in the future.
I mean, as soon as the Capital Ferry shows up with about a half mil, sure, why not?
Okay.
Now, I think our overall goal is to try and maybe get some stuff in cans by next summer. But it's with our capacity and fermentation, it's going to take us a while to get to that. But that's okay.
And the distribution right now that you have is primarily kegs. I think you said you self-distribute, and you also have a distributor do it for you.
We're at two different distributors, and we do some self-distribution. Once we transition to a full-blown brew pub license, we won't be doing any more self-distribution. So,
yeah. So there could be something in the future for you, but hasn't really jumped up because you've just been having too much fun making the good stuff now.
It took us a long time to even get up to the number of beers that we have now and to be able to kind of rotate them as is. Like, it's... To have a core portfolio of 12 and trying to do a couple seasonals here and there, it's challenging, especially when we added the distribution component, which put a whole new wrench into things in terms of managing inventory, managing production schedules, and all that. And that's the primary focus for so long has been to feed the tap room. So it really, with the number of core portfolio beers we have, it's hard to even get those on all the time. So, like, we're down only one right now. And you being English, I apologize that it's our ESB that we're down.
No, damn! That's all right. There's plenty of other good ones.
If you want to try, some half-fermented out of the fermenter, I guess we could do that, but it may not be the best representation.
That's all right. A lot of you, going back to the naming of your beers, a lot of your beers have these wacky names. And they seem to be named... That's the only wacky you're doing. They seem to be named after people you know. For example, let's go back to your absolutely brilliantly named and the one that everybody sniggers at, Judgmental Dick, because there was lots of fun over that one with the ladies at the York.
Oh, my God. That is, maybe the most brilliant and, totally accidental marketing thing I ever did. It was, inadvertently calling one of my better friends from college and after college, a Judgmental Dick. So he's, awesome guy. He was I don't even remember what, I don't even think he was drinking the double IPA. I don't even think we had made it yet. He was drinking something and was critiquing it, and I just off the cuff called him, oh, you're just being a judgmental dick. So he's like, can you name a beer after me, call that? Yes, I can. And he's a big hop guy, so, it made sense to do our double IPA like that. But the branding that Laughlin Constable did for that, I think it's just brilliant. The hipster, the eyeless hipster with the mustache with the tagline of go another IPA, how original. It just works.
And the poster for it has one of those pictures which has taken out the eyes. It seems to just be a caricature, not really a caricature, but a line drawing of eyebrows and a mustache. Is that actually a representation of him?
No, he's he don't look anything like that.
Okay. It reminds me of one of those guys who've seen those pictures of the muscle man in those striped
like
bathing outfits.
Like, yeah, that's exactly. Like a bare knuckle boxer guy who's like standing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that one is an absolutely excellent beer. If you haven't tried it, you really need to.
Okay.
This porter. Okay, yeah. Wow, man. this porter is really, really good. Again, nothing I've had so far says to me that you've got anything other than great beers that are going to be solid for everybody's taste.
And that's kind of one of the things we did when, you know, we look at the portfolio we have is we don't really focus on one style in particular. We're actually pretty light IPA-wise. I mean, we have an APA, we've got a double, we've got one IPA that's kind of on our flagship IPA that's generally always on. We've done other one-off IPAs.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, we do everything from, we've got a blonde, we've got a wit, we've got a saison, we've got the pomegranate wheat, we've got an ESB, an APA, an IPA.
I would say your pomegranate wheat is your one item that is bit off the cuff, right? You've added pomegranate to wheat.
Yeah,
and that's kind of different. I'd never had one before, and I thought it was pretty tasty.
I'd never even heard of it before until my wife said, make a pomegranate wheat. So I'm like, okay.
It's all I could do to figure out what a bloody pomegranate is, but I know it's pretty, isn't it dry?
They're
sour?
It's tart. It's definitely
tart.
Like,
oh, it's
yeah,
a tart.
It's tart.
Okay.
It's
all
real,
right.
I mean, so, and then, I mean, we ended up making a molasses out of it, so it was, I mean, that was really a product of trying to figure out how the hell to make a pomegranate wheat in the first place,
yeah.
So... If you're like, well, I mean, we'll just use it as part of the gravity, which means we got to make it into a molasses, so let's figure out how to make that into a molasses and then dump it in the boil. Kind of a cool thing about that one, too, is, like, the color actually ferments out. So it's a pretty, like, straw, pale-colored beer, but mm-hmm. When it goes from the kettle to the fermenter, it's definitely got, like, a kind of amber color to it from all the... I mean, it's a pretty dark red that gets dumped in there, so it's interesting.
So when you're brewing your beers, what music do you listen to? Or don't you? And what music do you like?
Generally, a lot of... I'm one of those, like, indie, folky rock people, so a lot of, like, National, Band of Horses, Blind Pilot, Local Natives, you know, emo rock, all that crap.
And who are these people?
Who? Those guys?
So nothing classic rock then?
No, I mean, it just, well, if I have classic rock, I'd be like in the Metallica era, but it's really not. I'm like, it just happened to be on my phone when my iPod died and I'm too lazy to get another one, so.
Oh, okay.
A lot of Death Cab, too. A lot of Death Cab for
you
Cutie.
You like who?
Death Cab for Cutie. A lot of those guys.
Oh, okay. And with that, I'll resort to Google to find out who the hell these people are.
Who or what? Is it?
Yes. While we were gone, I pulled out the, I'm having problems again, Scots squash.
There you go.
And it is a Scottish ale. And we were having a off-mic discussion about it, and Chris brought up a very good point that it's a Scottish ale, not a Scotch ale.
Right.
And that there is a significant difference. And Chris, what is that?
Well, I mean, it's almost akin.
It's a test, by the way.
Oh my god, you can do amazing on this. It's, I mean, it's kind of like the same thing as like going from an APA to an IPA to a double IPA, right? I mean, it's Scottish ales have a spectrum too, and it's whether or not it's much of a distinction anymore. I mean, they used to do like 60, 70, 80 shilling, which with each higher number increased the alcohol. And then you got to Scotch ales. I mean, Scotch ales are the bigger beers, like that I think people are more familiar with. I mean, and so we get a lot of they go, you have a Scotch. I'm like, no, it's a Scottish ale. It's not a Scotch ale. And that's just, I mean, it's a, and it is a fairly important distinction. It's almost like saying, you know, if you're drinking a 60 shilling, you're probably drinking like an APA or it's like a session APA or whatever the hell they call those things right. nowadays.
And what is this one?
That's a, that would be equivalent to like an 80 shilling. So it would be like the highest gravity of non-Scotch ale. I mean, okay. And then you get like to the wee heavies and all that stuff, and then you're talking.
And when you're talking about the shillings, I think that's how long it ferments or brews or something.
How much it costs.
Oh, how much it costs. That's right. And I remember now because Mark, who is not here with us, told me how they detected that back in the old days. They had a guy with leather pants come along and he'd spill some of the beer on the seat and then he'd sit on it and see how long it stuck. You're looking at me as if I'm... Maybe he's...
This is an accurate measuring system?
I don't know. Well, that... Well, for the Scots it is. My God. For hell,
see, isn't a shilling in English
that's good
enough currency?
For us. Yeah, well, they always use their money. You know, But, so, you have a different story?
No, I have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, no, that was what Mark told me. The guy in leather pants sat on this bench, and how long it was, how it stuck to his pants, he would be able... Because he was an expert at this, he would be able to detect what the shilling ratio would be.
Okay. Sure.
Good. I mean, I've dumbfounded him. Moving on.
I mean, I guess if there was like less sugar in the beer, then it would be less sticky. So, I'm just picturing some burly guy in leather pants at this point, which is
that's right,
a whole other conversation.
So, if there was a beer that you could brew regardless of production costs, like length of time to brew it, you know, the amount of work you put into it, what would that be?
I don't even know. I gotta digest the question for about.
Yeah,
five
I know.
Minutes.
How about that for a question, man?
That's
the reason I ask that is that I think a lot of the time that brewers look at their job and they say, "I've got to produce something that is very, consumer oriented, that people will drink and that will move." Because bottom line is, I need to make money.
Yeah.
So if you had a choice of, hey, I don't care about making money, I just want to brew, you know, a double barrel Brussels sprout beer or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Something that you've really never done but you'd always wanted to.
Like, that's a really good question, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been there are definitely some things we've done small batch that I want to do. Large batch that we're planning on doing in the fall. Like, we did a really small batch of like a Michigan cherry wheat, which was phenomenal. Like, we just took, it was like kind of a basic wheat,
slightly wacky.
Yes, you are. No, it was just like a basic wheat grain bill. And then we, after primary fermentation was done, we added some like just chopped up tart dry Michigan cherries. Really, it came out really awesome. I'm a big fan of that. And then another beer I think we're going to plan on doing this fall is we did a coffee. It's kind of like a hybrid between our porter and milk stout. We kind of called it a pout.
There you go.
what we did was there's a roaster out in Wheaton, River City Roaster.
River City Roaster?
Yeah. They've got some awesome coffee, and they do a coffee that's... I believe the process they do is they condition the beans in whiskey barrels and then they roast them. Coffee's phenomenal. I mean, it's just, I feel like you're cheating in the morning and having like...
You know, I'm bringing in another brewery, you know, that Dry City behind. They use them as well. So that's a great endorsement for them.
Oh, yeah, Ben and Jess are great. We met a couple times at festivals. Good guys. We did a small batch of that and it was kind of... Really enjoyed that, so I'd like to try and do that like on a 5-barrel equivalent. I mean, but it's hard to kind of find the time to do new stuff sometimes, and then it's a lot of the stuff we're doing. I mean, not like we're doing test batch though. Like
I was going to ask you, do you have a pilot system?
No,
apparently not.
I got a pilot system. It's a 5-barrel brew house back there.
Nice.
So I mean, at this point, I'm kind of just taking the approach well. You know how to make beer, you know how to make beer. And if it's not, it may not be 100% of what you want, but if you're going to redo it, maybe you tweak it down the road. But it's, you know, it's not going to get so screwed up you hate it. So, So yeah, that's really been kind of the. I don't know. That's I'm going back to that question. Like yeah, maybe
he's
I actually have a double take
on that one.
I would maybe next. I would really like to do a watermelon beer that doesn't suck next year.
Oh, okay.
So I
was
going to
say because you said that, and watermelon beers only come a close second to pumpkin beers, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm glad to see you don't have a pumpkin beer.
We will never make a pumpkin beer.
Or if you do, let's make it just, you know, something like a smoked pumpkin with no spices, you know, and that sort of thing.
How about we just not make a pumpkin beer?
Okay, well, we'll agree on that one, then. All right. So if we look at what we have in front of us, and I know the folks there can't see it, but I'll take a picture. I've got three of your darker beers in front of me. We've been drinking the Scottish Ale. You rushed off and got a sampler of your English brown ale, your
northern English brown ale.
It's a good English northern brown ale, lad, from up there in Yorkshire. And we'll sample that. And then next to that, the last one we got is your milk stout, which I called it, I think it's
Validated.
Damn, I was going to say it. I was thinking about it. Validated. Yeah.
Validated.
And obviously named after yourself it and is. A validation of how well you brew beers.
In my defense, I did not actually come up with that term.
Okay.
So that was, that's another one of those beers that was named kind of on a, like, whim. I think it actually went back to when I was still practicing at the office. We were, like, three of us were having a discussion in the office about, I think, indie music or something. And one of the other guys, and I can't remember who said it, like, oh, you just want to be validated. Because they were like, this guy was listing off bands. I'm like... Like, that's awesome. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do with that information, but that may make its way to a beer name eventually.
So you know where all this is heading, don't you? The fact that you name beers after what people come up with, you know, you need to name a beer after the Brit and Yankee podcast. So you need to use English malts or English hops and American hops or English American hop, you know.
Well,
a combination of the two there, man, and you got your Brit and Yankee beer. Your Brit and Yankee pointable.
Okay.
We're going to get it. We're going to get it one day. You are one of the few breweries that has gone the whole hog, if you'll pardon the pun, and put in food as part of your brewery. You have a full kitchen.
We do.
You have a wonderful chef who I was able to meet because we tasted the fish tacos, and it has mahi-mahi in it, which is kind of interesting and really tasty, and then a pickled cabbage on the bottom. So I would recommend those. But what made you decide to do brewing and not just have a tap room, but... go with a kitchen?
So based on like where we're located on the strip and kind of what we're doing here, I think we recognized food was going to be a necessary component. I mean, it's the space itself is larger than just kind of like an industrial strip tap room type location, and you know, so that was a long-running debate. Like, we went back and forth, like, well, do we want to do this? Do we want to do that? Do we want to be this? Do we want to be that? And it's definitely difficult to, like, try and find your identity right out of the gate. You know, it was something that we went back and forth on, and I think ultimately we made the right decision. It's definitely more complicating to have that component of it because you're dealing with two different animals in their entirety. And at the end of the day, you're opening a restaurant, even though you may not intend to, and that was kind of a difficult thing to kind of recognize at some point. Like, well, you know, we're not just a brew pub. We're not just a, you know, a tasting room. It's like we're a restaurant, and we need to embrace that. You know, we're still a brewery because at the end of the day, we're producing beer. We're sending it out the door. We're serving it here. But, you know, we have to make that part of our identity, and that That was challenging, and we've been definitely gone through different iterations of, you know, who's running the show back there, and it's third time's the charm, and like our chef's awesome, and so she's fantastic.
And she has quite a good pedigree, right? She comes from, and not a Marston's pedigree, but pedigree in chef world.
Yeah, she was at Revolution for several years, and then Lagunitas the last couple of years. I mean, she can just cook. I mean, she's awesome. So we're really happy to have her here. And
so are you having food pairing dinners here, or do you recommend pairings for your beers with your meals?
That's something like that's one of those aspects of like continual improvement and evolution of the business. I think we didn't really focus on that too much. But one of the things that she's brought into the table is like increasing the amount of our beer that we're cooking with, the different beers we're cooking with. Like currently, with her back there, like now we have our barbecue sauce for our pulled pork is made with our porter, which like I would never have thought to do. We just recently had an event, like a festival here this past weekend, and like we did, one of the things we did was like a bacon wrap brat, and she made like this awesome like stone ground mustard with judgmental dick in it, and it was just awesome. So I mean, it's really, the girl can just cook. So like, and that's kind of a cool thing to like. I think it's something that you want to, it makes sense to kind of pair and incorporate the beer as much as you can.
And that's a great segue, because I think you said you were going to be doing some food dinners with other restaurants.
Yeah, we have November 17th, we have a beer dinner with the Saddle Room out in Hoffman Estates. So we're going to be doing, I think it's a 5 or 6 course meal with them. They're going to pair a bunch of our beers with their food. I think we're also going to do a one-off beer for that event, which is going to be kind of, actually, going back to the crazy thing, might be the craziest thing I've ever been asked to make.
Uh-oh, it's
going to
be a... Here comes the wacky folks.
It's going to be a wacky... it's going to be a cranberry, brown sugar, and sage ale.
Whoa!
So,
holy cow.
Yeah.
You had me at cranberry and brown sugar, but then you added sage in, and I'm thinking, what is this, turkey stuffing?
It's Thanksgiving, so I think it's getting the whole... It's getting everything Thanksgiving related in there.
Oh,
so
man.
Yeah.
I know you do. You speak of ingredients, and I know you do your own sodas.
We do
craft sodas. You told me you had a raspberry mint one.
We do.
Which sounded absolutely interesting. What else do you do? I mean, you know,
we've done.
And why do you do them?
We've tried to kind of do things that we think are kind of really cool and unique that we've seen at other places, and like you know, if this is something we want to do, it's actually really easy to make. So it's really just, it's kind of a cool thing to be able to experiment with.
Right.
We've done we did a grapefruit rosemary for several months. They were actually using like a Rattler, so we take like our APA and mix it with
nice.
That. Really nice. We mix our brown ale with Dugan's there with our cream soda.
Yep. So we had our three of the darker styles in front of me, and I tried the Dugan, is it?
Dugan's Brown.
Dugan's Brown. Obviously, there's a name story there.
Named after a chocolate lab that belonged to really good friends of ours. Actually, the first guy I ever met when I moved to Chicago from Ohio.
Cool.
Totally random. Like, he and I worked at the same, like, we met our first day at this company that we both moved out here to work for, graduated same year, same major, same college, and his last name was Vantel, and mine was Valo, so we were kind of seated alphabetically. Like, instant best friend.
There you go.
So,
well, it's great. He's got a beer named after him, because this reminded me of pre-1970s Newcastle Brown Ale, the way it used to be until the big boys got hold of it and just put so many preservatives in it. It's just a simple, tasty, smooth beer. Would recommend this to anybody. I think it's probably one of my favorites. But having said that, I've also gone to the Milk Stout, which is your validated. Did I get it right?
Oh, yeah, right.
God. After all this time, man. And this one is very, very nice. Sweet in aroma, sweet at first, but then that chocolatey, vanilla-y thing comes through, and it just goes down a lovely treat.
Oh, it's, yeah, I mean, it's, I think, I think when we made this at home, it may have been reduced with a little bit of bourbon into a little sauce over some ice cream before. So it's, yeah, it's probably the milk stout.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
Put that around an ice cream. No, there you go.
Oh, yeah. Milk stout's kind of one of my favorite styles. Yeah. I love milk stout. So.
And this one starts off sweet. But does not finish sweet. Just finishes deliciously. I would say a little bittery, if you will.
Yeah, it's doesn't
like
have
a bitter chocolate. There
doesn't
you go.
Have a cloying sweetness that remains.
Right.
It's got kind of that nice clean end to it. So yeah, we finished that beer off on Ghana cocoa nibs and Madagascar bourbon vanilla beans. So like once fermentation's over, we'll kind of let it age a little bit, not too long, a couple days or whatever on that. And it's really. Like, I love that beer. It's one of my favorites of ours. It's one of, like, why isn't that distributed more? Like, why don't we sell more of that beer? That beer's awesome.
Well, and I think what you have here, we've gone through a number of your samples. I haven't tried them all, obviously. You have a great selection here that's well worth coming in for a sampler and then picking the one that you really like and drinking a couple of pints of that. Where is Exit Strategy going next? Are you just going to continue to stabilize here? Do you think you're ever going to expand?
I think the next thing we're looking to probably do is to continue to grow the taproom business through changes here, and then distribution will kind of continue to organically grow. I think we're looking to add different territories in the next 4 to 5 months. And to expand, our presence in existing territories, and I think that's a realistic goal. It probably will involve some expansion in terms of our fermentation capacity within the next, I'd like to say, 6 months tops. We'll see how that goes, but I think that's the next logical step. We've tried to organically grow our business as much as possible. We've not tried to overreach anything. And
well, it's been a real pleasure. I've enjoyed having a chat with you several times about the way you're going, and you have an approach that I feel is similar to mine. I just make good frickin' beer, all right, and drink it.
Absolutely.
And with that, we can pick up our glasses. Yours is empty, Chris. You can have one of mine, so we get the clank with the beer. Okay.
I appreciate it.
I gotta finish mine.
I never actually get to drink our beer that much anymore. I'm around it at 5 in the morning.
Yeah, I know. There you go.
Yeah,
is that what you do at 5 in the morning? Holy crap.
I've been mashed in by like 4 to 5 sometimes. Yeah.
Get in, get out, get done, right?
Yeah. That's.
Without Mark here, of course, we can't have our usual traditional endings, but of course, we know the final ending, and that is cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Britain Yankee!
Britain Yankee!
I'll have a pint, go, give us a pint. You got any tetanus?
Got a pint, please, Bob. Give me another pint, please, Bob.